First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Duval Schools looks at suing the state, as the state says the president is punishing Florida by withholding COVID medicine. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this morning, why the state is buying up antibody treatments for COVID patients and what's going on with the schools in our area when it comes to protecting kids from the disease. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look at the race to replace the late Tommy Hazzori. But first this morning, Jacksonville's main library downtown remains closed indefinitely, we're told, as it continues to host the city's state-run COVID antibody treatment clinic. At the same time, we learned this week that Florida is going to buy up 3,000 doses of GlaxoSmithKline's monoclonal antibody treatment. This after the Biden administration reduced the federal supply of Regeneron coming into the state. And there's more news. Last night, the Duval County Public School Board authorized the district's legal team to sue the Florida Department of Health. Now, this dispute is over an emergency rule that requires school districts to allow parents to opt their kids out of mask mandates and quarantine requirements. Lots to get into. Dr. Jen Coward is a hospitalist in Jacksonville and co-founder of the group Doctors Fighting COVID. She's on the line. Dr. Coward, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good to be here.
And as we talk Regeneron, local school districts battling the state and more, give us a call, folks, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org. Tweets to at Melissa Injax. Well, Dr. Cowart, what is the current situation regarding COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths? It does seem that the numbers are finally starting to tick down just a little bit. What can you share?
Yeah, thank goodness. I think you're exactly right. It looks like Florida overall, and specifically Duval County and the surrounding areas, are starting to see a decrease, a sustained decrease in new COVID cases, as well as hospitalizations and ICU usage. Some of this is seems to be the natural history of the Delta variant. We've seen this in other countries as well, where it comes on fast and then goes away, which is, you know, it's terrible on the way up, but we're grateful that it's coming down. Jacksonville is one of the first hit areas in Florida and indeed in the country. And so we were some of the first to experience this surge, but also starting to see some relief from it, maybe earlier even than some other parts of the state.
That's good news. Now, one of the prongs in the arsenal to fight this pandemic is a drug called Regeneron, monoclonal antibody treatment for people who are already positive for the disease. The main library downtown is the city's state-run clinic for this kind of treatment, controversially so. Some people are upset that the library is closed for this. It has helped thousands of people, though. At the same time, we learned this week Florida is going to buy up more monoclonal antibody treatment because the Biden administration has reduced the federal supply of Regeneron. How important is this aspect of the effort to control the pandemic in your estimation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think first off, you know, we always want to talk about prevention. It's always better not to get sick than to get sick and require a treatment. So first line will continue to be masking and vaccines to try to prevent people from getting sick. That said, I'm always happy to have more options in, as you said, my arsenal to treat COVID-19. And so the monoclonal antibodies and having increased access and awareness of the monoclonal antibodies, I think, have been helpful over the last couple of weeks to months in trying to just prevent people from getting terribly sick. You know, again, they may still feel terrible. They may still feel very ill. They're out of work. But it may help reduce the number of people that had to come to the hospital or get super sick. So the monoclonal antibodies can be quite helpful. Now, overall, the federal government is continuing to increase the amount of monoclonal antibodies that they are ordering and paying for from the manufacturers. Currently, the main one that we had been using was Regeneron. Unfortunately, the what we call the Bam Bam product hadn't been shown to be as effective in the Delta variant, which is what we're seeing right now. So they are overall increasing these monoclonal antibodies across the country, but the whole country is in the grips now of this Delta variant surge. And so it appears to be that the federal government is trying to spread a limited supply of this drug across all 50 states, and that has led to a decrease in the amount of monoclonal antibodies that were available to us here in Florida.
It's 549-2937. On Facebook, Sarah writes, why are people willing to take the treatment but not the vaccine? It makes no sense to me. Dr. Coward, as you mentioned, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It's better to get vaccinated and wear the mask. This is the gospel you and other doctors have been preaching from the get-go. How frustrating is it for you as you treat these patients that there is still a stubborn minority of folks out there that doesn't want to hear this message? And we keep seeing reports of unvaccinated people dying from this disease, and often eventimes going to their deathbed, continuing to deny that this is real. It's really just unbelievable sometimes to watch.
It is, and it's very painful. It's painful for these folks' families. It's painful for those of us that work in medicine that have to take care of them, because we want all of our patients to do well, regardless of, you know, whatever circumstances brought you to us. And so it's very painful when we have people who, continue to insist on medications that either haven't been proven to work or have been shown not to work, in the case of stuff like hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, and refusing in some cases the treatments that we want to provide in the hospital. Now, most of my unvaccinated patients just say they didn't think it was a big deal. They really just, they felt they were healthy. They thought they were going to be fine. They didn't get around to the vaccine. They didn't see it as a big deal. And then many of them come in sick, hypoxic, and then they ask me for the vaccine. And of course, I can't give it to them right then because they're sick and I'm having to treat them for COVID. So, I think we haven't given enough time to talk about not the hardcore folks against vaccination, but the ones who just didn't think this was that big a deal. These are our friends and family members, our patients, our coworkers who haven't gotten around to the vaccine for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And it's really time to talk to those folks and say, there is no better time than right now. It's time. Get vaccinated.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I think that provides really important context. Okay, and I want to get your reaction to the news last night that the Duval County School Board is looking to potentially sue the Florida Department of Health over this ongoing clash between local school districts and state rules around how to protect students and school staff from the disease. As a physician, what's your take?
Yeah, my medical opinion is that we still need to have masks on our students in schools. We do not need to be taking that away just yet. Have a further conversation down the road when the case positivity is much lower and we're able to vaccinate our children under the age of 12, then I would, we could really then medically have a different conversation. But right now, I just think it doesn't make any medical sense at all to be trying to take away masks in schools. And so the Duval County School Board took what to them was a tough vote to mandate masks with only a medical opt-out. And they need to be able to make that decision from local control, as Chair Anderson said at the beginning of the hour. So if locally, the experts locally, myself, one of those included, says, masks are really crucially important to stopping the spread of disease for our children and our staff and teachers, then they need to be able to do that without fear of retribution from the state. This, of course, just my personal opinion. But medically, I think we need to have masks on our kids in schools. And our school board is trying to fight to keep our kids safe. So I support them in that.
And also the fight is over quarantining procedures as well. We should note the state is saying that asymptomatic students no longer need to quarantine if they test positive. Judy in Atlantic Beach emails the show, once again, the Duval Schools has shown courage in advocating for the safety and health of students in our schools. As the grandmother of a kindergarten student, our family applauds efforts to require masks, have students who test positive quarantine, and follow the science, she says. 549-2937. Oh, we just lost a call. 549-2937. Meanwhile, let's go to lots of other emails. Here's Dave. Does it seem strange that the governor is denying people the use of a library? You know, we still haven't gotten answers, frankly, Dr. Cowart, from the city about that. Why the main library downtown was chosen as the site for the Regeneron clinic, and why it has to remain closed indefinitely. I mean, certainly it's a central location. That makes sense. That said, you know, the Regency Mall was being used for quite some time as a place to get vaccinated and tested for COVID-19. And it sort of does beg the question why perhaps the Regeneron Clinic didn't go somewhere like that instead, because it has impacted library services. I realize this is an ancillary issue to people dying of this disease, but it is something that taxpayers have questioned. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I think initially, maybe if you're looking for a place quickly that's up and running, you know, then, you know, I suppose perhaps the library is a quick piece of city property that they would be able to use. But at this point, if we're going to continue to have this clinic available, you know, it would seem to me, like you said, other places might be pressed into service or asked or paid for. I think right now we're using the library free of charge. So we're not only losing out on the library services, but we're basically using that building without the state reimbursing in any way, is my understanding. You know, this new product that the state is purchasing now, this Sovorimab, I think I'm going to butcher that, is now only available via infusion. One benefit to the Regeneron is that you could give it via four quick shots subcutaneously. This new product appears to be only available as an infusion. It's going to take longer, and you would need to have more potential medical equipment around so you can provide IV access to give this infusion. And so, you know, it really would seem to me you'd need a different kind of space, something that you could set up a little more clinical. So I'd really love to see a conversation around, if we're going to keep this clinic going, let's move it into a better location that's more permanent, a little more clinical, where patients can be monitored during this infusion. And then those important library services that we're used to receiving in our downtown library, and, you know, let's get those back.
Yeah. There is no shortage of places, I guess, where such a clinic could go. It is something that we'll continue to follow. Meanwhile, as we speak with Dr. Jen Cowart, hospitalist and co-founder of Doctors Fighting COVID, give us a call, 549-2937. Dr. Cowart, here's a tweet from Matthew. How are monoclonal antibodies created? Are they only from patients, vaccinated people, or both? How is Regeneron made?
It is a lab-created product. So it's, taking antibodies that would fight against the virus and multiplying them over and over and over again in a lab. So I don't believe this is like convalescent plasma, for example, which is directly taken from recovered patients. It's meant to be one specific type of antibody in each product rather than the plasma product, which would have whatever was naturally created by that patient.
Okay. And to be clear, we've explained this many times, but let's explain it again. Regeneron is an option if you've already tested positive, and it's a way to keep you from becoming seriously ill. So it does have an effective method for some patients. But as you've been saying all along, what's even more effective is to prevent illness in the first place by becoming vaccinated. Can you talk about who would qualify for this treatment and what people need to know?
Yeah, so folks who qualify for Regeneron first, as you said, they have to be positive for COVID-19. There is a window for people who are very high risk who've been exposed, and I would encourage anybody who thinks they're in that category to ask their doctor about it. But for the clinics that we're talking about, like at the library, you have to have a positive test. And you have to be at some degree of high risk for a poor outcome from COVID-19. So older age or comorbidities of some sort. And there's some good lists online. Essentially, if you think that you are at risk of doing poorly from COVID, or you're at risk of going to the hospital, let's say maybe you have lung disease or diabetes or high blood pressure, heart disease, then this treatment may be good for you if you've already tested positive for COVID. And so you can receive it at several hospitals throughout the area, or you can also receive it at the library clinic. In the hospital areas, it might be given as an IV infusion, and at the clinic and the library downtown, it's given as 4 shots when you're getting that Regeneron product. There's a couple other monoclonal antibodies, again, this new one from GlaxoSmithKline that the state has purchased that may also become available. Any one of them, if it's available to you, there's not really right now any reason to pick one over the other. Whatever one is available, with the exception of that one I mentioned that we affectionately call Bam Bam. We're not really offering that at my hospital at this time.
Bam Bam? What's that?
Bam Bam! You know, not the adorable character from the Flintstones. I think it's Bam Lam Vanibib. I can't even say it. So we called it Bam Bam. But that one wasn't, unfortunately, shown to be effective during the Delta variant. So that one's not really in a lot of use at this time. So regardless, when you walk in, you don't have to try to pick from the menu and say, I want Regeneron or I want this other one. You say, I want monoclonal antibodies. And as long as you meet those easy criteria, they will give it to you. I had many patients that did take those antibodies. Some of them did end up in the hospital.
Oh, really? Even after taking them? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially, it works best if you take it early. So if you've already been sick for a few days, you may still already have progressed somewhat. And that seems to be the patients that still ended up in the hospital. They'd already been sick for a few days. So I would say if you get sick with COVID, that you take that test and you think, I might get sick with this, I would go ahead and start looking into the monoclonal antibodies as soon as you get that positive test. Don't wait. It's longer for your suffering, first off, and the medicine works best if you take it very early.
549-2937, Peggy in Arlington. Hi, Peggy. Peggy, go ahead and turn your radio down and go right ahead. You're on the air. Peggy, please turn your radio down and go ahead.
My question for the doctor is, I'm very pro-vax. I believe people say, well, it hasn't been around long enough. It hasn't been tested. Hasn't the technique for creating this vaccine been around a long time? And how do I react to people who say it hasn't been around long enough?
Yeah. Peggy, thanks so much for that question. And we have tried to get that information out many times on this program. Let's do it again. Dr. Cowart.
Absolutely. What a great question. You're right. That mRNA vaccine technology that was used for Pfizer and Moderna has been under study for over a decade now, largely federally funded research, by the way. So it's not some conflation of big pharma, et cetera. So big science going into this mRNA technology for over a decade, showing that it's safe. The vaccines themselves been in production now for testing starting last year. Now we have millions of people worldwide vaccinated with the same vaccine. This is an unbelievably large group of people to be vaccinated. And we're not seeing any unusual signals in terms of vaccines with these vaccines. Vaccines also do not cause long-term consequences and side effects. So if I get a side effect from a vaccine, it's very soon. There are no vaccines that we know of that cause long-term downstream effects years down the road. So what we know is that this vaccine, the technology was under study for over a decade, shown to be safe. The vaccines have been administered in millions of people worldwide. And we know that they're effective at preventing serious illness from COVID-19. They're effective at reducing the risk of getting sick. And they're effective at not having long-term side effects or consequences. Again, some of the specific ones that people have talked about, not true, like fertility risk, for example. So no problem with fertility, very safe vaccine, safe to give in pregnancy because we don't want to lose any more pregnant moms to this terrible disease.
Meanwhile, Pfizer has submitted data to the FDA seeking to use a lighter dose of the vaccine in kids age 5 to 11. Parents are anxiously awaiting on that approval, too, for their children. Teresa in Jacksonville. Hi, Teresa. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Two questions quickly. I'd like the doctor to explain why it is that people can come in and just because they test positive, get this medication, whereas if I said to a pharmacist, I need an antibiotic because I think I have a urinary tract infection, they would not just hand me an antibiotic over the counter. And the second question is, how is it that the federal funding has been used to pay down student debt for the COVID federal funding? So those are my questions.
All right, Teresa. Dr. Cowart.
Okay. So in terms of the monoclonal antibodies, when the state put these clinics into place, they put into place an automatic order, I believe, from that then Surgeon General Rivke, such that it would be available without a specific prescription from your doctor. So it is under a special kind of authorization from the state of Florida versus your antibiotics for a urinary tract infection or other type of infection. So the state has created a separate pathway to receive these medications. And in terms of student loan debt, right now there is a program in place at the federal level to try to assist people who have been declared disabled in certain ways and unable to pay their student loans back and try to provide those folks some relief. Activists in that space have said this has been a long time coming. Previously, it was very difficult to discharge your student loan debt, even if you were disabled and unable to work and then pay that back. And so that is one way that student loan debt has been, assistance has been offered to folks who are disabled. This was not a blanket student loan forgiveness. You know, not all student loans went away. There was a special program for folks with disabilities to relieve them of that burden since they were unable to pay that student loan debt.
Here's an email from Nancy Stotts, MD. I am also concerned about our newly appointed Florida Surgeon General and some of his beliefs about herd immunity, disbelief in vaccinations, and other highly controversial positions jeopardizing our state's public health system. I hope there is an effort to look into this person more closely and that our legislature will not rubber stamp his approval. She's referring to the new Surgeon General appointee for Florida, Dr. Joseph Latipo. He is controversial. He is a signatory of a document called the Great Barrington Declaration, which essentially calls for just letting the virus run wild through the population to develop herd immunity. What are your thoughts about him, Dr. Cowart?
I am sure that Dr. Latipo has absolutely superb credentials and trained at excellent institutions in the country. That said, the signatories of the Great Barrington Declaration are a very small minority of the medical community. This position is largely rejected. I personally reject this position because natural herd immunity would require so many millions, if not billions, of people being infected worldwide and millions of deaths, as well as ongoing suffering with long COVID. So the idea with this was, we could somehow isolate the at-risk people and let the young and healthy do what they want to do. Everybody get COVID, and then the young and healthy would be immune, and we would protect somehow the old and infirm and disabled. But unfortunately, you know, what my experience has been and what the literature has showed is that young and healthy people can still get this illness, die of this illness, become disabled from this illness. It is not a benign strategy at all to achieve, quote, natural herd immunity. And it would take years at the rate that we're going. Even as many people have been infected, we're still talking years to get enough of the population infected with this virus to achieve this, quote, natural herd immunity. And so this position taken by Dr. Latipo and others is considered very fringe and very radical in most of the medical community. Again, many of these doctors are quite smart. They've trained at excellent institutions. They've come to their conclusions via very different belief systems in the medical literature. But the vast majority of the medical community rejects this particular belief in natural herd immunity. We've also seen, unfortunately, moves by the state in this direction. So you mentioned a lack of quarantine for students who've been exposed. That directly leads to that belief of natural herd immunity because we're no longer going to isolate those kids unless their parents choose to do so if they've been exposed, and that may allow for greater spread of the virus within our schools. So this is something that pediatric groups do not support, the doctors that actually provide care to children. And so, you know, this to me is a belief system from a very small group of physicians and medical professionals that the vast majority of medical professionals and the medical institutions do not support. We do not support the Great Barrington Declaration, and we do not support this attempt to achieve natural herd immunity.
Thank you. And always good to have your insights, Dr. Jen Cowart, hospitalist in Jacksonville and one of the founders of Doctors Fighting COVID. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, some good news to pick you up this Wednesday. But up next.
I'm ready to pick up that mantle, the progressive agenda that I think Jacksonville wants and needs. I'm really proud and eager to carry on Tommy Hazzouri's legacy.
Candidates are already lining up to replace the late Tommy Hazzouri. We speak with one of them, Tracy Polson, after this. We'll be right back. Well, candidates are already lining up to file and jump into the ring to replace the late city councilman Tommy Hazzouri. One of them is Tracy Polson, a licensed clinical social worker who's already had one run for local office. I spoke with her. Tracy Polson, good to be with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's really lovely to speak with you.
So the city is still mourning the death of Tommy Hazzouri. That said, there is an opening now for his at-large seat on the city council. You're one of the most prominent local Democrats to throw your hat in the ring. What drew you to this race?
Well, I was honored to have Tommy's endorsement for my House race in 2018, and I had been looking at this seat. I certainly didn't expect him to move into hospice and pass so quickly. Had that not happened, it was my intention to run for the seat and to ask him for his endorsement. I think you know I'm the only candidate so far who has been endorsed by Tommy while for another seat, and I'm ready to pick up that mantle with a progressive agenda that I think Jacksonville wants and needs. I'm really proud and eager to carry on Tommy Hazzouri's legacy.
Now, that's right, you did run and very nearly won a state house seat in Jacksonville that had been trending more purple demographically in recent years. This is an at-large seat. Winning citywide means appealing to all kinds of different people all over town, all over the county. What are the big issues that you'll be talking to the voters about?
Well, first, I think that people are really desperate for ethical, respectful, and trustworthy leaders, and I am that kind of leader. I'm already a trusted voice for my patients and my practice, my family, my profession, and my community. I have a very keen ear for listening, and I have a really good knack for asking thoughtful and tough questions, and I want to bring that to City Hall. I think what I want people to know coming out of the gate is that I can't be bought. In terms of integrity, I am the opposite of the group that tried to sell JEA. And I think you know that as a mental health professional, our neighbors' mental health and spiritual well-being is particularly important to me. We've seen awful devastation caused by this pandemic and how some zip codes were hit harder than others. So there's a lot that we have to do. We have seen the inequities in healthcare, housing, food insecurity, neighborhood safety, and of course, our environment. And I think that what we're seeing across all of those issues are the results of policies that put profit over people. And I think we deserve better in Jacksonville, and I think we can have better. So I have a lot of ideas about things that I'm interested in pursuing. I'm sure you knew that when Tommy was president of the city council, he put together a group called the Safer Together Committee. And I've read that report, and there are a couple of recommendations that came out of that report that I'm particularly interested in. First of all, the Jacksonville City Council understood that conversations really needed to take place about what police represent and the experiences and perspectives of our neighbors. And what they said in the report was whether justified or perceived, the level of mistrust among the African-American community regarding policing in general is high. I'd like to focus specifically on one of their top recommendations, which was on the mental health co-responding program. The report recommends shifting funds to refocus efforts on a co-responder program. This would ensure that each zone has a minimum of one mental health professional on each shift, and so that would be basically requiring a minimum of 18 full-time co-responders. I think that's an excellent way to start, and I would love to get behind that and advocate for that shift. I think we could also increase understanding that mental illness is a spectrum of struggles and disorders. I had Sheriff Mike Williams say to me on a Leadership Jacksonville Zoom call that the county jail is the number one provider of mental health services. I think we can all imagine that that is not the most effective or restorative place for people who are struggling with mental illness.
Yeah. Nobody likes that, including the JSO.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I loved about this recommendation. I think they're hungry for support in that area.
Okay. So going beyond criminal justice, which of course is a huge issue for Jacksonville, you mentioned several other really important issues for this city. Let's talk about environmental issues and sustainability issues in this coastal city where we also have a lot of riverfront property that's at risk. What should the city council be doing to become even more proactive than it already has been in recent years in addressing this long-term threat to Jacksonville?
Well, first of all, I think we must fix the sewer problem with regard to septic tanks and eliminate flooding after heavy rainfalls. I mean, people are going up in space. It's 2021, and I think we can solve that problem. But when you talk about the fact that climate change is a national security issue and we are a Navy town, Mayport is predicted to be underwater in the future. So if we don't have a plan and we're not acting on that plan now, then I just don't understand what we're doing. So I think we can really make this a much more vocal issue and that we get people to be really paying attention to it. I mean, trust me, I think it's scary to imagine it, but it is reality, and we have to get out of denial and we have to start planning. And there are things that we can do along the way. I think we should be planting trees to address erosion, mitigate heat. I think we should develop a preparedness plan. We have a resiliency committee and a resiliency officer. We should be supporting those initiatives and those efforts. I think we should look at areas of Jacksonville that are most impacted by asphalt trapping heat. And I think we see a lot of that on the west and north side. I think we have an opportunity to create green jobs. I mean, after all, we are the sunshine state, and we need renewable energy. But I am really focused on the fact that this is a national security issue. And I want to know, you know, how can we partner with our military and our state and local governments to make this a central priority.
There will be a special election to fill Tommy Hazuri's seat. There will be other names on the ballot besides yours, and we hope to speak to those candidates as well. What's your final message to the voters out there? It will be probably a pretty low turnout election. So what's your message to those who are just now starting to pay attention to this?
Trust me when I say that people are paying attention. Election day for this special election is December 7th. This is a Duval County-wide race. Every registered voter in Duval can vote. So if they're not registered, they need to get on that. Early voting starts the Saturday after Thanksgiving. It's likely that my opponent will be the Republican establishment pick, funded by the same 25 lobbyists, politicians, and developers that we've seen in too many races here in Jacksonville. Those fat cats, as Tommy might say, are part of the same old, same old. And to me, it makes no sense that a city that's majority minority should have too many good old boys and their cronies at the helm. And we can change that by electing me, a woman, to city council on December 7th.
Tracy Polson, PhD, licensed clinical social worker, former candidate for the State House and now running for the seat held by the late Tommy Hazuri, the at-large seat on the City Council. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, every year, roughly 250,000 women in this country get the news that will change their lives forever. They have breast cancer. It's a terrifying diagnosis, but most women survive it. That's if they discover their cancer early. The American Cancer Society says when breast cancer is detected early in the localized stage, the five-year survival rate is 99%. Breast Cancer Awareness Month is coming up, and Volunteers in Medicine is working to raise awareness among women who don't have access to life-saving mammograms. Jennifer Ryan is CEO at Volunteers in Medicine. She's on the line. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to hear your voice. So uninsured women have less access to these vital preventive services like mammograms. Tens of thousands in Duval County alone. Tell us what Volunteers in Medicine is doing to reach out to these patients.
So our goal is, you know, to provide free health care for the working uninsured and keep people out of emergency rooms. As a free clinic, we really see the importance of the working uninsured getting access to those early screenings. One of those is getting access to mammograms. So not only do we want them to qualify to become a patient with us, but we then want to encourage them, and we will even provide support so they can get a mammogram for free.
Which is great. I'm always so excited to spread the word about Volunteers in Medicine because these kinds of screenings make such a difference. Can you tell us how it works? What's the process for people to access the care of Volunteers in Medicine?
So to become a patient, you need to make between $13,000 and up to $31,000. That's 250% of poverty level. Once you qualify and call us, you are a patient for a full year. And during that time, we will set up a new patient appointment, which you will have 1 hour to meet with a doctor. And at that time, we will set up lab work. We can recommend you to get your mammogram. We can help pay for that. We will pay for that. We encourage all women to come in annually for their Well Women exam, where they can meet with a doctor and make sure that they're getting referrals for mammograms. We also have amazing partnerships. So during the time that someone is a patient with us, if they do get a breast cancer diagnosis, hopefully it's extremely, extremely early. So we have success in survival and that survival rate you talked about. And we have partners. We partner with Mayo Clinic, who helps our patients who have a breast cancer diagnosis. We actually have a Mayo Clinic oncologist that volunteers with us. We're very thankful for that. And we can help take a person all the way through their cancer. So we want to provide everything, the screenings, but we also can provide the treatment as well.
That's great. In 2020, you served more than 130 women with free breast exams in this area. And in the pandemic, a lot of people were delaying those kind of routine screenings. So this is so important, in particular, as we hopefully come soon out of this pandemic, because people have been putting off this kind of stuff, insurance or not, right?
It's so true. They are. The regular screenings, people are waiting until the very last minute when they don't feel well to actually come to the doctor. So we're doing everything we can to get the word out. We utilize 230 volunteers. So we're making sure that our volunteer physicians are encouraging people to get those screenings for women, the mammograms. And so we're doing everything we can. We've written grants so that paying for a mammogram is never a barrier for our patients. We also partner with the health department, their Florida Breast and Cervical Cancer Detection Program. They actually help get mammograms as well. So we will find a way to get those essential screenings for the women that we serve.
And Jennifer, can you talk about the bigger picture too, as we look beyond Breast Cancer Awareness Month? You are here for anyone who's uninsured in this community. Even with the advent of the Affordable Care Act, there are still plenty of people out there without health insurance, that they can't afford it. They don't have access to care. There are a lot of people falling through these cracks, and that's where you come in.
Yes, we are not on a wait list. We have space to serve the working uninsured. So if you know someone, most people, you know, it might be the person that cuts our hair. It might be the person that helps us with our lawn, someone that's starting a small business. These are people that their job doesn't provide health insurance, but they're making a decent living. You know, they might be living paycheck to paycheck, but they qualify most likely for our services. But I also want to share, Melissa, and a lot of people don't know about this, while we want our patients to come to us, there has been an expansion in the Affordable Care Act that not many people know about. If you make up to 150% of the poverty level, you qualify for all of the subsidies in the Affordable Care Act. So for a household of four, that's up to $39,750. So we want to fill a gap. So we're trying our best to educate that there is access to free health care in the healthcare exchange on healthcare.gov. We want to fill that gap. So we want to serve those people that don't have access to free health care. But we're here. We want to help the working uninsured. We want to keep people out of emergency rooms. And we want to provide good quality care to our patients. And so providing these screenings, these early detection, such as mammograms, providing that to our working uninsured is so important because it's not only impacts the quality of life and how long people are living, but it becomes very, very expensive for those people that want to get that quality care that they need.
Absolutely. So get in touch with Volunteers in Medicine if you need access to these screenings and any health care if you're uninsured. Give them a call or go to their website. It's vim-jax.org. Correct, Jennifer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
vim-jax.org. Volunteers in Medicine, helping the working uninsured of this area access healthcare for free. If that's you and you need to get in touch, don't wait. Call them today. Jennifer Ryan is CEO at Volunteers in Medicine, doing amazing work in this community. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too. And in a moment, there is so much going on all over town this weekend. We're going to put a smile on your face with a little bit of good news in our What's Good Wednesdays. That's coming up in just a few minutes. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
WJCT Public Media is bringing you a new healthcare show, What's Health Got to Do with It? Our goal is to help you navigate all things health and healthcare and get you the answers you deserve. Join me, Dr. Joe Servin, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 9 p.m. on WJCT News 89.9, sponsored in part by American Brain Foundation, Epilepsy Foundation, and Norellis.
The Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
Lee and Kate's Glass, family-owned and operated for 95 years. Lee and Kate's Glass is your source for upgrading your home's glass, from shower doors and mirrors to windows and tabletops. Learn more at leeandkatesglass.com.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com.
The Jacksonville Symphony's Concert Organ Series showcases the spectacular concert organ with over 6,200 pipes, completely unique to Jacksonville. The extraordinary young master organist Greg Zelek will enlighten us with a powerful yet intimate chamber performance of a selection of works by Bach, Mozart, Dvorak, Handel, and more. For tickets to this performance and further information on the concert series, visit jacksymphony.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Tarana Burke, founder of the Me Too movement. She started using the phrase in 2005 in her work with black and brown girls who were survivors of sexual violence, like she is. The Me Too hashtag went viral when victims started coming forward after the Harvey Weinstein allegations. Burke has written a new memoir. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
It's been estimated that the lack of affordable child care in America prevents 1 million parents from entering the workforce. Some Republicans have likened universal daycare to policies enacted by the old Soviet Union. But passing the president's child care plan is within reach. Who stands to lose most if lawmakers come up short? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Leadership Jacksonville is set to start taking new applications for its upcoming year. Full disclosure, I am an alum of LJ and show producer Heather Schatz is in the current class. If you have a young high school student, they want your young leader to get involved in this program too. Here's more from CEO Jill Dame.
Our current class just started with their opening retreat in August. We have 66 incredible community leaders from Jacksonville. I think our most diverse class that we have ever had. We're so excited, and it looks like they're going to be in person. We won't have to do as many virtual program days this year, so they will have a great year ahead of them. And then we will be opening our nominations for next year's class. It's hard to believe we barely start one and we're rolling forward with LJ 2023. Those applications will go open on October 1 on our website, leadershipjacks.org. We have a high school program that covers Baker, Clay, Duval, and most of St. John's County. And for that program, high school freshmen apply at their school. So students that are interested and are freshmen need to stop by and let someone in that office know that they would like to be considered to be their school's candidate for Youth Leadership Jacksonville.
Check it out, folks. And here's some more good news for your week. The Broadway smash Hamilton is on stage in Jacksonville starting tonight. We spoke with actor Marcus Choi. He plays George Washington in the show.
The thing about Hamilton that's so great is that it's so non-traditional in so many ways, as far as the casting goes and just the concept of incorporating hip-hop and rap into the musical genre. And I really like this has been done to this level. And so conceptually, I feel like it's a genius piece of theater on so many different levels, right? I think that this is also just like a real actor's musical as far as the characters go. And it really gives us a chance to just kind of dig into these characters.
Okay, tickets for Hamilton are available for purchase right now at fscjartistseries.org. The best availability is in the performances coming up October 12th through the 17th. Now, there is also a digital lottery for Hamilton with tickets providing a limited number for every performance for just $10 each. Search the hashtag #HamForHam, ham number four ham. The lottery closes at noon tomorrow for tickets to performances through October 6th, but they're going to have subsequent digital lotteries beginning each Friday for the upcoming week's performances. Here's how to enter. Use the official app for Hamilton, now available for all iOS and Android devices in the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. Search HamiltonMusical.com/app. You can also go to HamiltonMusical.com/lottery and register to get those Hamilton lottery tickets.
And this weekend, make sure to catch the River City Pride Parade, one of the most joyful events around. Mistress of Ceremonies Carissa Wade told me this family-friendly event is set for Saturday in Riverside, Avondale.
We'll be at Willow Branch Park, and we will end up in Five Points. And where we're going to end up will be the Riverside Park. And we've showcased Pride this year on our local talent. Our theme this year is Florida Strong, and so we wanted to showcase Jacksonville Strong, that we've made it through the pandemic very strong. We're still a community, we're still together, and we're still willing to help one another. We thought it was really important to showcase the love and strength that we have as a community here in Jacksonville.
So come on out for the Pride Parade. Well, like many organizations, the Pink Ribbon Symposium has been affected by the pandemic. This year, for their 14th annual symposium, it will be virtual. They'll record the event and have it available to listen to and stream on their website. Go to pinkribbonsymposium.org and check their Facebook page throughout the month of October. And finally, the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show is coming up this weekend at its traditional Prime Osborne location. Spokeswoman Liz Morgan says this year the show is bigger than ever, and it's all due to the pandemic.
Home has become everything for us. It's become the place we work from, in some cases now permanently. We can't go on vacation like we used to, so it's become the place that we get away, and it's also become our sanctuary from the chaotic world. So people are really turning inward to their homes, and there's so many trends that are just driven by pandemic lifestyle. So people are coming and they are doing everything from the smallest of repairs to overall renovations.
So lots to do this weekend, whether it's the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show at the Prime Osborne Convention Center, Hamilton at the Times Union Center, the River City Pride Parade Saturday afternoon in Riverside Avondale, or whatever strikes your fancy. Get out and enjoy this beautiful upcoming early fall weekend. And if you've got some good news for our weekly Wednesday menu, just drop us a line. And thanks for listening. Thanks also to Senior Producer Heather Schatz, Director Josh Torres, Associate Producer Catherine Hobbs, and Editorial Director Jessica Palumbo. Drop those lines to our email address. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And catch our podcast up later today on all platforms. You can also always listen right through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.